plate a potential nugget.
Let's talk about the two transitions, Vinay. You talk about the one in 1986 where Advani got the upper hand, and subsequently in 95 when Vajpayee started leading the party. If we just focused on, let's say, the first 3, 6, 9 months post that transition, I'm curious about how the two handled themselves. Every relationship needs a period of readjustment. So talk to us about what that looked like in those two passages of play.
Yeah, that's a good question, Deepak. But I think we are going to look 6 months after and 6 months prior, right? Or even prior.
Sure.
Because, you know, that eases the blow. So what are the mechanisms to ease that blow? Now, if you look at 1985, and sorry, you know, I have to go a little bit into the historical weeds for this. Now, why did the RSS force Vajpayee to step down? Because Vajpayee's analysis of what it took to defeat the Congress was that he felt that the BJP should join the non-Congress opposition by being secular and socialist, right? That was his idea. His sense was that if you wanted to, you know, and the Congress was the 180-pound gorilla in the room, right, from Indian independence up to the 80s. So he felt to defeat them, you have to align with the socialists, you have to align with the regional parties. And therefore, he felt that the BJP should have less to do with the RSS, right? He felt the BJP should portray a moderate image, right? That's why it's called the Bharatiya Janata Party. It uses the phrase Janata Party, which was the 1977 to 1980 party in India, in government in India, headed by Morarji Desai, but under the tutelage of Jayaprakash Narayan, which was seen as a secular socialist grassroots alternative to the centralizing tendency of Indira Gandhi. And in 1984, in the elections held, the BJP gets destroyed. It gets reduced to 2 seats, the lowest Hindu nationalism has got in its history, right? Now, my sense is that at least a part of it was Indira Gandhi's death a few months ago, which gave a sympathy wave to her son, Rajiv Gandhi. But the RSS interpreted it, and I think there's some truth to that also, that it was a rejection of Vajpayee's attempt at secularism. That the radical Hindu vote had gone to Rajiv Gandhi, you know, in memory of Indira Gandhi, who had stood against the breaking up of India's sacred geography. Now, so the puzzle in some sense is, after late 1984, why does it take a year and a half to kick out Vajpayee? That itself tells you something about the organization. There's no sudden, you know, humiliating kicking out. Vajpayee knew his time was up. He had a year to try to find a successor, right? And Advani's genius was he was personally loyal to Vajpayee while being ideologically loyal to the RSS. So he was basically the right winger or the hardliner that Vajpayee could deal with, right? So I think the first lesson of transition that you see then is don't make it sudden and humiliating, right? So there's 1.5 years between the sacking order and the actual leaving, right? And also consult the incumbent in who you want to replace her or him with, right? I think you see that there. In 1995, once again, you know, the Advani begins to realize after the demolition of the Babri Masjid and the fact that the BJP actually begins to lose states after the demolition, that maybe Hindus, the majority community in India, are tired of radicalism, right? And he begins to sense that, right? So he begins to slowly make moves immediately after that. Vajpayee becomes the leader of opposition, replacing Advani. So that's the first step, right? He's now the parliamentary voice of the BJP, you know, in, I think, around 93. And it takes him another 2 years to basically announce Vajpayee, not him, right? By which time it's reasonably obvious even to the RSS that the BJP is not going to get a single largest majority and needs allies. And Vajpayee is a much more conducive figure to get allies compared to Advani, right? So I think that's the first lesson, Deepak, from these transitions, which is that don't make it sudden, right? Because it's humiliating, it's insulting. You know, this Donald Trump, you are fired, right? In Indian context, people don't like it, right? But do it nonetheless, but take your time. Tell the incumbent that, look, your time is up. But consult him or her in who should be the replacement. So you get a mix of someone that person likes and someone you like. I think these are the two things that I would say stand out. And that help ensure that the relationship continued. To give you another example, which is, you asked what happened after. Between 1986 and 1995, on I would say 1993, Vajpayee was completely distant from the party. Nobody wanted to associate with him. He would sit in his house. I have these, you know, very colorful descriptions. He used to love eating prawn, which for like a Hindu BJP party was considered an issue. He didn't care. You know, he enjoyed his alcohol. He had his friends who would be drinking with him. And Advani wasn't invited, right? He wouldn't come. Advani was a teetotaler. He was also a vegetarian. So he was socially very removed from Vajpayee. But nonetheless, they would meet for lunch once a week. They would exchange notes. So when the professional relationship was torn, they had some kind of personal friendship. And as we see later, when the personal relationship frayed, when they were prime minister and deputy prime minister, they continued having some kind of professional relationship. So I think these are some of the insights on these two transitions that I see that were quite helpful for easing the blow, as it were. You know,
very interesting. And I love the point you make about the fact that it's not sudden, but you warm up to the transition rather than a cold
But
decision.
Nonetheless, you make it clear to the incumbent that it's final. So there's no politics and attempt.
It's a ticking clock.
Yeah, it's a ticking clock. So look, you're going to go. Let's make it the smoothest for you. You know.
Right.
I think, and to be fair, Vajpayee played that role. You know.
If this notion of how we should manage transitions is of interest, you might like the playlist Settling into a New Context. You can go to playtopotential.com and look at the curated playlist section and see how different leaders have dealt with this. You might also specifically like my conversation with Michael Watkins, who's been studying transition acceleration for several years and has arguably written the Bible of transitions, the first 90 days. One of the pieces he talks about is when you get promoted to a new role and your peers now start reporting to you, how do you manage that awkward dynamic? He, for example, talks about a situation in a cafeteria where you need to think about how you seat yourself. Are you going to seat yourself in the new table or in the old table? How do you walk that tightrope?
So it's a fun little, you know, sort of a thought experiment to think about doing that, right? And I think that the answer almost certainly is, if not immediately, pretty quickly, you should be sitting with your new peers, right? But you need to manage that in a way that's, you know, reasonably deft, unless you want to be sending a different signal, right, intentionally in the organization. But you still want to be acknowledging people. You don't want to be perceived as you know, disconnected or dismissive of that group of people in the process. But this is hard. It's just hard because I think that, I mean, I was speaking again with, as one of the set of stakeholder interviews I do with one of the CEOs I'm working with, I was talking to one of this person's previous direct reports, right, who now obviously is, you know, one step removed. And it was almost like he was going through a grieving process, right? He loved working with this leader and he was not going to have as much access as he used to have. And the new person in the role, you know, as his boss was an interim and maybe not the same necessarily quality or character of person. And so it's there's nothing easy about it, right? It's just really challenging. But at the same time, that new CEO can't afford to kind of give in to the impulse to stay as connected with that group of people as they used to. And I mean, I end up having conversations about this all the time, right? Because it's a real struggle.
For more, please look up the conversation with Michael Watkins. You can go to playtopotential.com and find him in the guest section. Thank you for listening.